So today I thought I would talk about Kamala Harris. And we all know that if Joe Biden should become president, God forbid, that she will be the real president of the United States. So according to various news media outlets, you know, of the more traditional nature, Kamala Harris is a moderate Democrat. She's a pragmatic liberal. But does that square with reality? You know, her own voting record in the US Senate is to the left of both Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. But we're told she is a moderate Democrat. But I'd like to go into Kamala Harris's background because it's frightening, to put it mildly. Now, Kamala Harris is the daughter of Don Harris, a Jamaican economist, and Shyamala Gopalan, who was a cancer researcher from India. She died in 2009, I believe it was. These two people met together in Berkeley in the 1960s as students. They got married and they had Kamala and her younger sister Maya. But both of them were very active in a group called the Afro-American Association. This was one of the far-left sort of black power groups operating at the time. And it was, you know, these people openly supported Fidel Castro. They supported Che Guevara. It was a Marxist group. Two members of the Afro-American Association, Bobby Seale and Huey Newton, would leave and go off to form the Black Panther Party, the pro-China militant Maoist terrorist Black Panthers, who really serve as a model for today's Black Lives Matter. The leader of the group, Donald Warden, would later change his name to Khalid al-Mansur, and many years later would apparently write a letter to Harvard University recommending that a young Barack Obama should be admitted to that college. So Don Harris was later appointed as an affirmative action Marxist professor at Stanford University. At the time, Stanford only had one Marxist in the economics department, and a group of radical students in the Union of Radical Political Economy, which later became a part of Democratic Socialists of America, which we know today from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and others. They mounted a big campaign at Stanford to bring more Marxists into the department. And they chose Don Harris as the most appropriate candidate. And after a several month long, I think it was a year long campaign, he was appointed there in 1975, basically as an affirmative action Marxist. So Kamala Harris grew up in that kind of environment, you know, far left parents. She was basically a red diaper baby, the child of Marxists. In her late teens, Kamala Harris went to Howard University in Washington, D.C., the largely black college, where she was a student radical protesting the causes of the day. Then she goes back to the Bay Area, back to San Francisco, and sets her sight on a legal and political career. It's not long after arriving in that city, she started an affair with a man called Willie Brown. Now, that set a few tongues wagging because Willie Brown was a very prominent Democratic politician in the town. He was a leader of the California State Legislature and later became mayor of San Francisco. But at the time, he was about 60 and young Kamala was about 30. And Willie Brown was still technically married to his wife, though estranged, I believe, at the time. And Willie Brown got Kamala a couple of jobs, you know, like jobs on boards that earned her about $450,000 over 5 years for attending a meeting or two a month, that kind of thing. But the big scandal was this, that Willie Brown was then and remains very sympathetic to communism. Back in the 1960s, he was first elected to public office by members of the Hallinan family. That was a very notorious San Francisco communist family. They were very close to Nancy Pelosi, for instance. And the youth wing of the Communist Party, the W.E.B. Du Bois clubs, elected Willie Brown to his first public job. Willie Brown was supported for many years financially by a man called Carlton Goodlett, who was also a good friend of Nancy Pelosi and a publisher of newspapers for the black community, a longtime Communist Party member, and who even received the Order of Lenin, the Lenin Prize from the Soviet Union for his peace work. So Willie Brown was very active in those communist circles. In those same circles around the time in the early 60s, Dianne Feinstein, then Diane Goldberg, now the senator from California, was very active in those circles too. So Willie Brown, even after his affair with Kamala Harris, still remained active in supporting Communist Party causes. As late as 2000, while mayor of San Francisco, Willie Brown was lending his name to endorsement lists for Communist Party events in the Bay Area. Even today, Willie Brown and Dianne Feinstein work very closely together, empowering the Chinese Communist Party in the Bay Area. Now, I would class them as Communist China's best friends in the whole region. So Kamala Harris decides to get into politics, and her first run is for a district attorney in San Francisco. And the man she beat was a member of the same Hallinan family that had elected Willie Brown many years before. But she got elected, and she starts to rise her way, you know, to make a name for herself, and was regarded as a leftist district attorney, but earned herself a little bit of enmity from some members of the black community for some of the stands she made. She was regarded as tough on some issues, but pretty liberal on most. But the man who actually got her the job, the man who actually funded her and financed her, was a man called Stephen Phillips. Now, during the 80s, Stephen Phillips, a young black guy, was a law student at Stanford University. He was an open Marxist-Leninist, very closely affiliated with a pro-Chinese communist group called the League of Revolutionary Struggle. And he was very good friends of a young radical named Maya Harris. He knew Maya Harris's family very well. And of course, Maya was the sister of Kamala Harris.
But few people know Kamala like we in the Bay Area do. I've known Kamala and her sister Maya, Maya's daughter Mina, for nearly 20 years now. I've watched her rise in California national politics and partnered with her and her sister on several important political fights.
So there was a family connection right there with Steve Phillips. Well, Steve Phillips, in the early 90s, he led much of the League of Revolutionary Struggle into the Democratic Party. They changed the name of the organization. They became a group called the Unity Organizing Center, and many of them moved into the Democratic Party, as did Steve Phillips. Steve Phillips stood for the school board in San Francisco and served on that board for some time. But as what really got him launched was the fact that he married his Stanford sweetheart, a young woman called Susan Sandler. Now, Susan Sandler was part of the very wealthy Bay Area family. She was the daughter of Herb and Marion Sandler, who owned a big savings and loan. I think it was the fifth biggest in the United States, called Golden West. Well, they sold that to Wachovia Bank. It was had a lot of subprime mortgages in it. It made Wachovia bankrupt, and Wachovia had to amalgamate with Wells Fargo. But anyway, they got a $2.2 billion profit from it. And Steve Phillips has used a lot of that money to engineer himself into some very senior positions in the left-wing establishment of America and in the Democratic Party. He was on the board of the Center for American Progress. They helped to fund and start ProPublica. In 2005, he went to Georgia, at Atlanta, where he met with George Soros and some other very rich billionaires, where they started the Democracy Alliance, which is now over 150 members strong and has donated hundreds of millions of dollars to Democratic Party and left-wing causes in America, ballot initiatives, candidates, etc., over the last 10 or 15 years. In 2008, Steve Phillips got about $10 million together. He started a group called Political Action Committee, later became called Power Pack, then Power Pack Plus. And he did mass voter registration drives amongst black and Latino communities in 17 southern and southwestern states. And that's what is, those registration drives are what he claims got his very good friend Barack Obama ahead of Hillary Clinton in the 2008 Democratic primary. Certainly Barack Obama is a big friend of Steve Phillips. You know, Barack Obama was at Steve Phillips' house in 2017, I believe it was, got a copy of Steve Phillips' new book. Nancy Pelosi got a copy too. The Steve Phillips, when he was at Stanford University, was a very big part of Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. And what that was, it was run mainly by pro-Chinese communists from the League of Revolutionary Struggle, Communist Workers' Party, Line of March, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, etc. The Rainbow Coalition of Jesse Jackson, he ran for president in 1984 and 1988, and he did very, very well. Far better than most people expected, because he drew an idea from a Black Panther who died in a hail of police bullets in 1970 in Chicago. The police raided his home, he shot back, and he came out the worst in that fight. The Black Panther, Fred Hampton, had the idea of the original Rainbow Coalition. You get the progressive whites, the progressive Latinos, and the progressive African Americans, and you meld them together into one force to give you more political influence. Well, Jesse Jackson got the progressive whites, the progressive Latinos, progressive blacks, progressive Asian Americans, progressive gays, progressive environmentalists, progressive Native Americans. So he had the red stripe, he had the lavender stripe, he had the yellow stripe, the green stripe, the white stripe, the black stripe, the brown stripe. And this is his terminology. This is not my terminology. Please understand that. But the idea was you get all the radicals together in one organization, and that gives you a chance to win elections. Well, in those days, minorities were maybe 12 to 15% of the population. Today, they are well over 30%. So the idea was really before its time. And so Steve Phillips has updated that theory. That's what got Obama elected in 2008. The progressive whites with the minorities, with the people of color. That formed the winning Obama coalition. Steve Phillips has written a book called Brown is the New White, a New York Times number one bestseller. And his argument is really simple. Democrats, if you want complete power in America, enduring power, stop wasting your time with the middle voters. Don't spend all of your money trying to convince 1% or 2% of independents to turn Democrat. There are millions of Democrats in the South who don't vote, mainly black, Latino minorities. Instead, put all of your money into getting them registered, getting them to the polls, run far-left candidates of colour, and then you'll win elections, and then you'll flip the South, and then you'll destroy the Republican Party as a force, and you will have complete power in America forever. That's the strategy that flipped Virginia. That's the strategy that supposedly won it for Biden in Georgia this election cycle. Came close in North Carolina, came close in, well, not so close in Florida, and actually won Arizona. This is the Rainbow Coalition applied to modern conditions and orchestrated by people like Stephen Phillips of the Democracy Alliance, and the money that they can command through people like George Soros and Tom Steyer and others. This is the philosophy that's now guiding much of the Democratic Party. So Steve Phillips got Obama elected, I can say that. He worked in 2018 and almost got the far-left Stacey Abrams elected as governor of Georgia, a long-time Steve Phillips protege, and almost elected the black socialist Andrew Gillum as governor of Florida. And Gillum served on Steve Phillips's PowerPack board for several years. So this is the philosophy that is guiding today's Democratic Party. So they understood, and I've been saying this for several years now, that Kamala Harris would be the candidate for the Democrats in 2020 because she's part of the Steve Phillips stable. She is one of his proteges.
I have seen the work of PowerPack around the country. It really is the work that inspires a lot of people to even consider the fact that they could be leaders and know that if they choose to take that step, there will be support for them. And the support will be broad and it will be deep and it will be significant.
She is half Indian. She's half black. She's female. She's the perfect rainbow coalition candidate. And I've been predicting this for over 3 years. And when she bowed out of the presidential race just before Christmas in 2019, I lost some steak dinners over that. But now I'm back to claim them back because she is really the Democrats' candidate. Everybody knows that Joe Biden won't last his first term. He probably won't last the first year if he should be elected. She is the candidate. She is third term of Obama, effectively. So Kamala Harris, she gets elected to California DA on Steve Phillips' money. She gets elected to Attorney General for California on Steve Phillips' money. She gets elected to U.S. Senate on Steve Phillips' money. And now Steve Phillips and his friends are trying to get her into the White House. Now, Steve Phillips, under Obama, helped to get Tony West, which is Maya Harris's husband, into the Justice Department, number three under Eric Holder. Now he is being seriously considered for Attorney General. So that's another part of the Harris clan that would be moved into a very key position of power. I'll backtrack a little bit. Kamala Harris, her husband, Doug Emhoff, his legal firm, is notorious for its ties to Communist China. They do a lot of business with Communist China. They actually have Chinese Communist Party members on their staff. So that's one aspect. Kamala Harris's chief of staff, Karine Jean-Pierre, is a militant leftist who in 2003, I believe it was, went to Haiti to meet with radicals down there with members of the Workers' World Party, which is a pro-China, pro-Russia, pro-North Korea, pro-Iran communist party. Now she would come into the White House with Kamala Harris. Another troubling connection is Kamala Harris mentored a young woman for many years. She employed her, a young woman called Latifa Simon. The two are best friends. You see photographs of them all together all over the internet. Well, when Kamala Harris met Latifa Simon, she was serving on the board of the Youth Empowerment Center in the Bay Area. Every other board member at the time, and that was Harmony Goldberg, Adam Gold, Cindy Weissner and Van Jones, were members of a Maoist revolutionary group standing together to organize a revolutionary movement or storm. Some people may know Van Jones. He's on CNN. He was briefly Obama's Green Jobs advisor in charge of a multi-billion dollar budget. And I exposed his communist background, and Glenn Beck got him kicked out of the White House in 2009. But that is where this young woman, Latifa Simon, came from. This group, okay? So Kamala Harris picked her up, she employed her, she got her through college, and helped her in her political career. Latifa Simon is now serving on the Bay Area Rapid Transit Board. She was chairman for a while and also a leader of the Akonadi Foundation, a very left-wing foundation in the San Francisco Bay Area. But Latifah Simon is also very, very close friends of a young woman called Alicia Garza. You would all know her as the key founder of Black Lives Matter. Alicia Garza is very close to Alex Tom, a leader of the San Francisco-based Chinese Progressive Association, which is front for Communist China, for the Chinese Communist Party in the Bay Area. It runs Bay Area politics. So Latifah Simon and Alicia Garza are best friends. The Chinese Progressive Association helped Alicia Garza set up Black Lives Matter. So today, Kamala Harris and Alicia Garza and Latifah Simon form a little set, a group. And recently, before the election, Kamala Harris was on record saying that the Black Lives Matter protests of 2020 were essential. They were wonderful and they should carry on after the election. Black Lives Matter is now trying to tell Joe Biden who he should or should not put into his cabinet. Black Lives Matter is now trying to pressure California Governor Gavin Newsom to replace Kamala Harris in the US Senate with either Bay Area Congresswoman Barbara Lee or Los Angeles Congresswoman Karen Bass. Both of those women were involved with the Black Panther Party. Both were involved with the Communist Party USA. Both were involved with Maoist groups. Barbara Lee's been to Cuba 22 times. Karen Bass has been there 16 times. Both of them are communists. Both come out of the Black Panther milieu. So Black Lives Matter is trying to get the California Senate under its control, plus get their very good friend, Kamala Harris, into the White House. Can you imagine if they succeed in those goals? So if you look at Kamala Harris, she's a red diaper baby. Her whole career depends on pro-Chinese communists. Willie Brown, Steve Phillips, her parents, all of the people around her who have guided her career, who helped her. You know, she's even married to a man who works for the Chinese communists. Donald Trump recently said that if Joe Biden becomes president, this country will be owned by China. Well, he couldn't have picked a better VP candidate to help him in the job than Kamala Harris. She will be China's best friend in the White House if, God forbid, she gets into that position. So I hope I've sort of enlightened you into the fact that Kamala Harris is no moderate. She's no pragmatist. She is a hardcore leftist who has worked with Maoist communists, been around Maoist communists her entire life, her entire political career. So we'll obviously be following up a little